In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Come join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We're throwing out the script. We don't charge a penny.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you all to Free Ballin', and I want to introduce my guest. He is my co-host, and he recently, his film, West Flies the Raven, won a couple of awards. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Mr. Edward Helstern!
Woo! Fucking love that guy!
That's my Gary!
Thank you, dude. I was not expecting that. Thank you very much.
Well, good. If you did expect it, it's like it would ruin the surprise, wouldn't it?
You see, like, that's bum sex. You know, the best thing you never knew you needed.
There you go. No, but seriously though, dude, I'm really happy for you. I'm super proud. It's seriously well deserved. And
Thank you, man.
Just talk about it, bro. Let us know how was it? How was the whole experience?
I just want to start by saying would not be in this position if we did not have such a phenomenal cast and crew that this time last year were eagerly awaiting the edited version of Raven, because we went from filming mid October and we were basically close to being finished by Christmas. That turnaround is insane to me. Yeah, absolutely insane. I remember leaving for LA for a holiday with you, and we sort of like, we had, I'd say, better part of a month. There was like a week and a half, 10 days in LA, and then you had 2 weeks in the UK. Before that, I gave them the script, and there was a few days in LA where I was like, it was a bit back and forth. What do you think about these costumes? What do you think about this location? I was like, boys, like, I'm on fucking holiday, man. Like, we have the money set up. We have the script set up. You have my blessing. Like, it was a lot. And then we came back and we had like a week of production where I was with the boys. Like, big shout out to Mockingbird, Ross and Ben. Absolutely phenomenal guys. And we just, boom, it was there. It was ready. I was like, if we're ready, let's just fucking go. So we did it. And usually, like, my little filmmaker's brain is like, oh, we'll be in production until Christmas, then we'll film maybe in the new year or spring. I was like, nope, doing it. We're doing it live. And it was like, just everyone came together. Like, it was a huge endeavor. Ambitious was the word that was thrown around whilst we're filming. And even now, like, people that have, like, only heard about the project. There was a lot of people in Birmingham Film Fest that came up to me and was like, yo, I heard about Raven. Like, I'd love to see it. Please send it to me. You know, I've heard it was like, you know, what was your budget kind of thing? That was a big question I got a lot of times. You may have had an answer off me in the film festival after I'd had a couple of drinks, but before I was like, it's kind of like being on, what's the famous road in LA where there's bouncers
Route
if you don't 66. Have enough money? No, if you don't have a lot of money. Rodeo Drive or some shit?
Oh, Rodeo, yeah.
Yeah, if you have to ask for the price, you can't afford it.
You can't afford it.
What's a ZJ? If you have to ask, you can't afford it. I'm not even going to give you where that film's from because you should know if you're a fan of freeballing. But yeah, man, it was awesome. We won best stunts choreography, best production design, and I couldn't be happier. We were nominated for so much more, but I think, you know, this year the Birmingham Film Fest. I was actually speaking to a friend about this, the film festival from last year to this year. The jump, the leap they made in making this feel legit was unbelievable. Last year we were in the Burlington Hotel and we were just like in a hotel conference, big conference room. Burlington hotels are like worldwide, they're nice, so it was proper swanky, but it still had hotel vibes. The hotel bar was shit, like the drinks weren't good. We arrived in the weekend to the ICC, massive event. Like the night before was the Royal Television Awards, which are like, they're huge. Like they're held at the same time in London, Midlands, and Northwest, basically Manchester. And like you can see what's like there's TV screens where you can see what's happening in each one. They're televised. It's huge. Mockingbird actually won for their short film Jack. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, throughout this next year, let's premiere Westwise the Raven on YouTube and see if they can't get that back to back. That would be pretty sick. Because like that looked pretty good. And I was like, oh, there's no way Birmingham Film Fest is going to look like this. And it did. I was like, yo. Like, they said they had like thousands of submissions. So the fact that some we were nominated is good. But so for me, winning two, the only production that won two awards, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone else was like, you know, like, yeah, you know, one win for this, one win for that. We got two and they were back to back. We'd come off the stage for production design and then they were calling stunts and choreography. We're taking photos. We're doing all the hullabaloo. And there's a photo of me as stunts and choreography was called and they called Westwise the Raven again. And there's a photo of me that someone got and I'm like, I got caught in 4K, bro. You believe me? Like, as soon as it comes out, instant meme. When your mum says fucking Christmas A. dinner's ready.
Fucking A, man.
When your boy comes around to pick you up for cheeky bevvies in the pub. Just picture, like, I know you guys can't see me, but like, I'm sort of doing a snapshot of like me with like a stupid sort of surprised look on my face. It's hard to recreate because like it was one of those moments.
Yeah.
And the red wine was flowing, and only because if I had one problem, Coors Light in a bottle, yeah. $5.57 a bottle. Criminal. We are Birmingham, not London. Get it together. Criminal. As someone who knows where the good level is, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I have my sort of, there's a side to me that's like, well, I can pop out when necessary. But when I see there's Coors Light on the menu for like beers and like Prava, like a Czech a beer from Prague, also $5.75. So I'm like, okay, both those beers are not the same, and both those beers are not worth £6 of the King's Sterling. I was about to say the Queen's, but, you know, somebody's 6 feet under. Makes you rest in pieces or whatever that phrase is. So I was like, you know what? I'm not even gonna drink this alcoholic piss water. I was like, how much is a bottle of red wine? And I heard one of the waiters like doing the serving. He's like, whole bottle? I was like, you heard me. The whole bottle. Because we opened it on the table, everyone had a glass, it was tasty and delicious. I was like, yeah. Fuck it. Why are we forcing ourselves to get any kind of merry from shit? Maybe Coors need to take the time in making their beer not taste like shit, rather than spending all their money and time on that Blue Mountain bollocks. It even works on our pint glasses until you put them through the dishwasher once. Sorry, yeah. So that was the only problem. The drink. I guess the drink. But my dumbass at like 12 o'clock when they were still serving. So, oh, you know what? I'm going to have a double vodka Red Bull. I was up till 4 o'clock in the morning, just wired, man, just seeing colours and shit. It's like, why isn't anyone uploading on YouTube? Like, I felt like a completed YouTube, bro. That's how wired I was. I was just sitting there. We've all had those moments where we've like, I don't want to go to bed, but I definitely can't stay on YouTube because there's nothing to watch.
Oh, YouTube completed it, mate.
But thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Of course. Absolutely. So before we get to the episode, I know you wanted to talk about Netflix and how they've essentially become this generation's Fox. And when I say that, Fox had the worst reputation of canceling shows, good or bad, after the first season. Yes. Obviously, if it's a bad show, it's not that big of a loss. But if it's a good show, like, you know, a Firefly or Freaks and Geeks, you're killing the show. It has so much potential that could be one of your biggest shows, but you're killing because you don't understand it after the first season. And now we're seeing that with Netflix. Netflix has been doing that a lot recently. And I mean, I gotta tell you, man, I remember when Netflix was like, you know, first getting into this stuff, I was like, you know, this is a great platform. This is a great way for new people to get shit out there. And, you know, it's not tied to the way TV is done and this and that, but it's slowly morphed into like traditional TV, and it's fucking, it's bananas. Like, I don't, you know, what's your take on it? It's crazy.
So I know, like, I know of Fox, like, for me, like, everything American when I was really watching TV back in the day came through BBC, ITV, or Sky. And Sky was where we got a lot of the American stuff. BBC, ITV, sort of self-produced shows. But they were like, you know, what's the phrase? Like a churning mill? Where they just, like, every year, like, your shows you wanted to watch, unless you had the TV satellite guide, that you were gonna get lost.
Yeah.
And then we had, like, you know, sort of the classic shows, the CSIs, all that kind of good shit, the stuff that just never seemed to end. Like, and now it's kind of become not so much CSI but NCIS. I know a new one has started in Sydney, and I'm just like, do we need any more? Like, I thought NCIS was meant to be American. Why are we in Sydney, man? Like, I know the Navy's everywhere, and, like, you know, American Navy is, like, you know, if an American Navy personnel is going to get drugs, die, or murdered in Sydney, I guess the Americans have to be involved. But fucking hell, it just seems like, how many original stories can you think of for one particular through line show of... that's just procedural generated cop drama, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in turn, like, and I thought, you know, here comes Netflix. An opportunity for original, modern content away from the cable TV way of thinking, which is very act-driven. Like, I've actually been told off by people who have read my scripts. It's like saying, it reads like a streaming service, but you're telling us when you're at, you're telling us where your acts are. You've got your act break, end of act one, end of act two, all that kind of thing. That's cable television. And it took a writing mentor to tell me, he's like, I know where you've gone wrong. You've, like, you know, you've sort of tried to combine the two, and no one has made that sort of, no one's made that leap yet. Amazon's trying to force that leap with The Boys and releasing everything week by week, which everyone hated when they started with season two. But I think it delivers a much more fluid story. Like, I'm not anti-binging, so to speak, but, like, week by week is very sort of my childhood nostalgia. That's just the way I watched things. It was nice to sort of do things in between episodes, you know what I mean? In terms of, the way seasons were delivered through Netflix, they've maintained the whole, okay, here's your season, watch it at your will. Watch 30 minutes here of an hour episode and then finish it whenever you like, or watch the whole thing as soon as it comes out, that we've done from before now with Cobra Kai when we got season two and we were living together and we were like, right, got the snacks, got the supplies, we've got Cobra Kai season two. I'm wired in. And we just nonstop.
We watched the whole thing.
And I don't regret it. But the problem is, you get... either way, you get into these shows, and then it almost feels like, I don't know if it's like Netflix not believing in the show or the demographic, the audience. It's a lot to, maybe a lot of the times is we get into these shows, but no one else does. And then it, like, the way I was going to is, it feels like we get robbed. Yeah. We get robbed of, like you say, all this potential, all this emotion. Like, all this setup is, like, I remember the, it was called The Event. That was cable television. I'm pretty sure it was Fox now. And it was, who's the shopping mall owner from Bad Santa? Ritter? John Ritter? He is, his son is the lead in The Event. And it's a different world is invading Earth, and it's like sort of espionage, kind of feels a bit superhero-y, secret invasion kind of shit. And then it ends with that Earth, like that planet, actually coming into our atmosphere, and it's, oh shit. Nope, fuck you. You can kiss my ass if we got season two.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? The big phrase is it you just feel robbed. And it's not a one season wonder, but Final Space. It was such a, we had short seasons, like 8 to 10 episodes a season, short episodes because they're 30 minutes long. But the amount of emotion, the amount of character, just the way everything seemed to evolve. And then TNT didn't want it, HBO didn't want it, but HBO put it on their streaming service, and now they only want it on their streaming service so they could fuck it off as a tax write-off, which is exactly what they have done. And I was like, oh, when it came out on DVD and Blu-ray, I didn't jump on it. After this episode, if you are listening, go to eBay. Go see how much a DVD, someone is selling DVDs and eBays of Final Space for. Fucking ridiculous. Something that used to be like $20 on the shelf, and I'm so annoyed I didn't get it because it's just about to go off international Netflix. You've already lost it. There's no way for you in America to see it now unless you have it on DVD or Blu-ray. But they, like Olin Rogers himself has mentioned, we only had a certain amount of money from TNT, HBO to even get physical release. So even then, they're rare now. They were still rare when they first came out. And I'm so upset. I know we're getting the graphic novel to finish off the story, but like it's beyond the one season wonder, but Netflix loves themselves doing one season and then just like taking it away to the point where there was an article from Screen Rant, and Screen Rant are pretty reliable. I've used them for information for the podcast before now. They do good lists. And they were saying, oh, five of the biggest shows on Netflix just got cancelled. I didn't fucking recognise any of them. How many shows does this fucking streaming service even have? Why do you need that many? Why can't you choose one of mine? Like,
it feels like, obviously, because Netflix is grown to such like an international thing, it needs to like cater to so many different markets that it's like, you know, it's like you said, you know, the demographics and people who are watching it.
Yeah.
It's numbers, man. It's numbers. With the more eyeballs it shows, I feel like, and that's how it's always going to be. The more eyeballs something has, the more love that's going to get.
Mm.
And it's like, but it's also that thing of like, well, if you're not promoting something in the right way, you can't get eyeballs on it. You're effectively setting it up for failure.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's one of the things that a lot of shows on Netflix and, you know, like Final Space and other shows like that suffer from the most. It's like, the shows, do you like, how do you, I don't know how to market this. So I'm just not going to.
Well, yeah.
Man, you're just flushing money down the toilet.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, from a business perspective, that's how I look at it. If you're putting all this money into a show to get made, you're paying actors, directors, writers, animators, you know, all these crew people. And then when you get the final product, you're like, oh, I have no idea what to do with it. Then why the fuck did you put the money into it, man?
Yeah.
Have the plan before. It's not like you didn't know what the fuck the show was going to be. You had people telling you what it was going to be.
One of their biggest series is that isn't even English speaking, but people will call it one of Netflix's best original series is Dark. It had a spin-off called 1899, set around the Bermuda Triangle. It was advertised well. It was all over the place. It was on buses, like it was on bus stops. That's even a big thing in America, like advertising on the buses and the bus stops. Billboards. Yeah. It was on like TikTok and all that kind of shit. One season wonder. And what was one of the things that people were talking about when it was first coming out? How much was spent per episode? I do not give a fuck about this stat.
Yeah.
Like, and then Amazon did the same thing with Rings of Power. Ooh, $1 billion per episode. Okay. Cool. What are you going to tell me about Lord of the Rings that I don't already know? Oh, you're going to take the ideas of shit that you don't have the rights to produce and do some bullshit. Okay, cool, awesome. Because they can't, like, no one can make anything to do with Lord of the Rings about the Silmarillion. The Tolkien estate won't allow anyone to do so because, no, it's the same way James Cameron didn't do Avatar right after Titanic. Like, the technology just wasn't there. Silmarillion is huge. Think fucking Sauron is a bad guy? Fucking Morgoth. Malachi for Morgoth or some shit. Fucking dude's a badass. Dude's a planet-sized badass. Basically Galactus in Lord of the Rings. So they're just taking little bits and pieces and shit. It's all computer-generated. It's still not holding, like, the ideals of, like, Peter Jackson and all that kind of shit. Because, like, that was the beauty of Lord of the Rings. And now it just looks like an episode of Planet Earth.
It's like with that Cowboy Bebop, the live-action
good
version of that
fucking
came out on Netflix.
Christ,
there was,
can we stop?
So much hype around that. There was so much build-up for it. And it got cancelled after the first season.
Yeah, because no one who is a fan of anime wants to see that anime is recreated live action, but apparently One Piece was meant to be good. But
it's just one of those things, you know, it's like, it's cool to get the opportunity. It's cool, you know, obviously, you know, you get the opportunity to put out something that you want, that you've been wanting to do, a story that you want to tell, and this and that. But, you know, and then you just have it ripped away. It's like, why are you even giving me the shot if you're just going to take it away at the end?
Yeah. It's why, like, I'm sort of reluctant to start new things now, unless I know it's a limited series. Yeah. And now Netflix has started to tell you. It used to just say, this is a movie, this is a TV. Now it says, this is a limited series, this is a mini series.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
I think that's why it's got to do that, too, because it's like, you know, you've effectively got to cover your own ass.
You do, yeah. Because there's, like, you see there's so much backlash. Every time a show's cancelled, there's always someone on X starting some petition. So I just can't. Fucking Twitter, it's fucking Twitter, man. X.
Yeah, I've never called it X.
Yeah.
Every time I see anyone say, "Oh yeah, I saw this on X," it doesn't sound like Twitter. It sounds like something you shouldn't be saying out loud. It's one of those like sites where you're like, "Oh yeah, I saw this on X."
It's like some journalists real quick on the news. James Gunn was talking about his new Superman Legacy on X, formerly known as Twitter. Like, it's so mouthy. You have to like sort of, I know, chew your food first, man. There's always someone on Twitter starting some petition to bring a season back, and I think it just made me think for today's episode that we're going to go into just in a moment after the break, is I want to talk about some of the seasons from maybe the streamings. I don't know. I think most of our choices are from classic cable television.
Traditional TV.
The series is that were trusted, had a fan base, and went the distance, and just sort of, you know, which ones we like the most.
Yep. And when we'll get into that when we come back. So stick around. Don't go anywhere.
Please.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, and we're back.
Alrighty then. So just before the break, we were talking about Westwise the Raven, and also sort of the epidemic on streaming services of the one season wonder. But now we're going to be talking about those series that were not one season wonders and actually gave us the chance to sort of evolve the characters, give us a story, even have their story finish as well. Just before we get into it, the one season wonder is bad, but I don't think there's anything as bad, especially last year. Holy crap. Westworld. Nothing is as bad as a show that is just in front of the finish line, and then it's like, no, fuck you, we don't have the budget anymore. Fucking you, what?
And then on the cliffhanger, you have your one season wonders, and you have the shows that you know have to end on that cliffhanger. And you're like, what the fuck? But then you also have those shows that stay around a little too long. That stay around. They have outworn their welcome. They have finished their story and they just refuse to go away. And I'm talking like, as much as I love the show, Supernatural was one of those shows that just like,
Oh, damn.
I feel like it overstayed, man. It should not have been a 15-season show. It should have been a 5-season show.
There was a moment... So we were talking about Supernatural before we even started recording. That there was, like, around about season 7, the show reinvented itself. They killed off Bobby. It, like, back then in TV, unheard of. I didn't know a TV series that was killing off a mainstay character. But Supernatural was like, we need to take this leap. It's a case of they use him too much. He's becoming a crutch. We need to take it away from them. And then they had the whole Men of Letters bullshit. And I saw it was round about then I dropped off a little bit. I've seen the whole thing now. But it's like sort of halfway through the Men of Letters, they had a character called Masters come around, or Master some shit. The girl that ends up living in the D&D world.
Mm-hmm.
Like Judy Greer, I think it is. No, it's not Judy Greer. I just know someone who's in a lot of TV. She's in
Felicia Day.
Felicia Day. Her. She's awesome. Love her as an actress.
She's great.
She's great. And then what I came back when I heard the news that like season 12 and season 13 were actually like the tits. Like some of the best Supernatural's ever been, and people were like, end it on a high. But it was doing so well that the CW was like,
they wanted to keep it going. Nah.
No, you guys want this, so we're going to shove it down your throats. And that's not the first time CW has done that. Oh, you like Arrow? Here, have Flash. Have Black Lightning. Have Supergirl. Have a crossover every year. No.
That would have been fine. Honestly, like I love the crossovers. I thought the show was great. But yeah, there is something about TV shows outstaying their welcome. And then those TV shows that, you know, they fall flat on their fucking face at the end. Like How I Met Your Mother.
Does not stick the landing.
No, that is legs broken, knees popping, and just like, oh no. And then you watch the alternate ending, and it's like, oh, in an alternate universe, you stuck the landing and you won the fucking gold, dude. But you chose to snap your ankles, rupture your fucking calves, and pop your knees. All right, good choice. Great.
Hey, you want to see me dive off the top, the top one? And hey, nothing can go wrong. Ah, it's all gone wrong.
Just belly flop right into the fucking
belly
pool,
flop,
man.
It's
just
like slapping a dead fish on a stagnant pond.
Yeah. Yep.
I've had those shits before now. Fucking hell.
Fucking hell.
But then there's the shows.
We're talking about.
That find the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
That give us a story. Like I said, they give us character. They give us emotion. They evolve. It changes. They come. They go. We laugh. We love. And then it ends. And there's sometimes you're like, I don't know what to do with myself. But then there's also sometimes where it's like, yeah, this felt right. And I'm going to kick us off with House.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Led by the incomparable Hugh Laurie. That I imagine when the Americans first saw him pick up an Emmy and he spoke in an English accent, most of America
was like, what the fuck? Like, the first thing I ever saw Hugh Laurie in was Stuart Little. So when I saw him in House, I was like, oh, okay. And then you hear with an English accent, you're like, hold up. Stuart Little's dad's is English?
Wait, what?
This is some bullshit.
Come again for Big Fudge. Whereas most English people know him from Fry and Laurie, Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie. Yes, Stephen Fry wasn't always the asshole documentarian that does coke in Buckingham Palace. He used to be a comedian. And these motherfuckers met on Blackadder, Rowan Atkinson's series,
amazing.
Before he was Mr. Bean. Whereas if you talk to me, and you talk about Rowan Atkinson, and someone says, oh, yeah, Mr. Bean, I am more than likely about to punch you in the face.
You just went deep into, like, some British pop culture, too. That's some crazy shit.
I am.
I love
me some Blackadder, to the point where me and the boys, when we came out of Napoleon the other night, we spoke about it for a little bit, but we ended up talking about how great Blackadder, like, sort of reinvented history for, like... Not really to tell you about the era, but reinvented history for comedy, but whilst maintaining the seriousness, especially with Blackadder Goes Forth. Just before we got into House, Blackadder Goes Forth tells the story of World War One, and it's funny. It's like, because I think there's Napoleon made his name for winning so many battles, but Ridley Scott at the end is like, yeah, but it cost 4 million lives in a time when lives weren't like everywhere as they are now. So it's like, you know, he kind of just like, if I just send waves of people, I'll win. And that's what Field Marshal Haig did with World War One. He literally said, if I just send waves of people, we'll win. But the Germans was like, we have guns now. And everyone died. And there's this moment where they're talking...
And nothing can go wrong.
Oh, no, it's all gone wrong. But there's this moment where they're talking about land they've captured. So here we are, sir. Here's the land we've captured. And it's like, so this is like a really detailed map. No, sir, this is the actual land we've captured. Here, there's a worm. And it's like literally just like a one by one Minecraft block of land. And then at the end, after they've dodged the going over the top so many times, they have to do it. Mm-hmm. And Ronak says, all right, everyone's ready. And you just, you know, they're speaking through nervousness now. And then Hugh Laurie goes, I thought I'd lost my bat, my truncheon bat. Ah, won't be able to kill many Jerrys without that. Because not all of the soldiers have guns. So they made fun of that. And then the music kicks in and the whistle goes. And then Hugh Laurie has to blow his whistle and they go up top. And then it just ends with like them disappearing into the fog. Mm-hmm. And that was the last season of Blackadder we ever got. After that, it was Blackadder Goes Back and Forth, where they actually almost save Napoleon and have to sort of like refix time so that he dies.
Yeah.
Good series. If you haven't seen it, go see it. The movie is awesome. But House, fuck me sideways. As a series that started off with Hugh as like sort of like a specialist physician with a team of people that sort of specialized in sort of the weird and wonderful in medicine, trying to fix it. Like, you know, his brain is killing him, but it's because he got stabbed in the foot when he was 4 years old or some shit. And then it was always a case of if there's something wrong with the brain, it's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Like, but it always required House, like throwing up this big red tennis ball. It's like, you don't talk to him when he's throwing up the tennis ball. That tennis ball saved lives. But then out of nowhere, there's like a new team. There's new people. Like in one season, almost in a season's worth of storytelling, House goes through some bullshit, his team goes through some bullshit, and it's a new people, and Olivia Wilde is part of the new one. She's like this really, really hot bisexual character that like everyone was trying to sleep with, which was kind of a bit of a dodgy storyline because even House is trying to sleep with her. But then it's like they give her like sort of a true lesbian awakening. And I never saw that. Like, that was my first instance of like sort of a TV series handling like gay and lesbian stories well, in my eyes.
Yeah.
Sort of, especially in sort of reinventing that whole sort of manic pixie Barbie doll, because she is part of House's team. She isn't just here to like sort of be a sex idol. She is smart as hell and one of the smartest characters in the series. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait, are we just getting these guys now? I thought, like, you know, they for a few years they were mentioned as interns, but then they sort of kept returning, and the other guys were in, like, were the background. One of them went into surgery and only appeared in the episodes when they needed surgeries. And I was like, holy shit, this show's actually like sort of like not just removed characters for no good reason, but suggested that, oh, they don't need to work for House anymore. They need to work for themselves. And it was like, especially me as a watcher at that time, not a creator, not even acting really. I was like, whoa, what the hell? Like, no, I was used to CSI, the same guys every week, every season. Mm-hmm. I was used to like cartoons, the same guys every week, every season. Or there was like, you know, the odd episode where, you know, someone else came in. Especially with CSI, there was never like a concurrent episode unless it was like the last two episodes of the season when the bad guys almost won. When no, they don't. It was House that
sort
of
made... It's just an organic growth you don't really see in TV and stuff.
Organic growth. And then out of nowhere, it was like sort of when other series started to do it around it, do that around House, House redeveloped the wheel once again and was like, how about our hero is actually our villain? And they gave us a whole season of Hugh Laurie's character just devolving, like rather than evolving, devolving, to the point where our he has everything he wants taken away from him. He no longer has that team, and he has to like sort of come back two seasons later and sort of rebuild it from the ground up, in like the right way this time, not being a dick, not being obtuse, although still maintaining that sort of I'm the smartest person in the room. And then there was like the whole idea that like he was in the bus crash and he had to start using the walking stick all the time, to the point where Hugh Laurie now walks with a bit of a limp because of how much acting he had to do on House recreating the limp. And you can watch House, like everyone remembers House with the walking stick and the limp. He's more famous for that as a character than anything else, really. When you first start the series, doesn't have it. It happens throughout the show. And then his best friend next to him, Wilson, which is how the season ends, how the series ends. Wilson is an oncologist, so he deals with cancer. You know what they do in the last season? Wilson fucking gets cancer. As the most ironic, poetic piece of bullshit you could ever imagine.
Like, I know it shouldn't come off as funny, but to give the oncologist cancer is really fucking funny.
But it's like
it's darkly funny.
You're a bastard. It's like that's like they have this moment to tell us that like he's always been there, even though House has been a dick. Wilson's always been there. Even when
he's like the constant.
Even though when House got his limp in the bus crash, it was Wilson's girlfriend who was with him, who House used to have as like one of his assistants. She dies, he doesn't. But he does, and then Wilson tries to blame House for not saving her, even though when we finally see the crash, House does try to save her, but she's scared of House, so she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then boom, it all goes tits up. And then we see Wilson's apartment and nothing's changed. Like he actually did love her, and it's like the cup that she drank from that morning was still there with cold coffee in it. And it's like, holy shit, Wilson's actually struggling and now he's got cancer and this kind of thing. And you don't realise what House is doing throughout the entire season, but he's actually setting up the place so that he can leave. And so that Wilson can leave. And Wilson's like, I don't want to leave. It's like, yes, you do. Yes, you fucking do. You've made enough money. I've made enough money. You've got a couple of months left. And so it's the two of them. It's a bit gay. But they ride off into the sunset on motorcycles, ready to go. Like, it's that one, like, it's the one thing that's always been mentioned throughout the series. They've always wanted to do like a road trip.
Yeah.
And like they finally get to do it, and it's just a really nice ending to a really good show. That to a certain point when the strikes almost killed the show, I was like, you can't end it like this. You can't end it with House as the villain. And it had this sort of four seasons left to sort of rebuild the character. And it was like, I've just, you know, Scrubs came close. I think JD, it wasn't like seasons upon seasons, but there's definitely seasons where like, you know, JD got like was devolved, like sort of the comedic mistake of having JD as like co-chief or something, co-chief, and Elliot was chief, and then it
co-chief resident,
chief of residency, and JD had to be okay with that. And it was like he wasn't, and it's actually kind of difficult to watch. It's like, why doesn't Elliot deserve it as well? And then it ends with JD being okay, and he puts the co-sign back on, kind of thing.
I loved Dr. Cox's explanation for that, where it's like, you know, Elliot's just the most methodically thinking, you know, doctor. Like, she, you know, she's very scientific, but her bedside manner is for shit because she's basically a robot. Where in the flip, it's like JD is the most nurturing doctor. You know, he takes care of his patients, but his whole being the studious doctor is for shit.
Yeah.
So between the two of them together, they make one barely passable doctor.
Yeah. I just think House is a great series. Haven't watched it. Go watch it. I do realize we're pressed for a little bit of time, so I'm going to shut the fuck up. You take it away.
Right. So, cheating a little bit with mine, just because it is still going, and it, you know, it's an animated series, but you know, most animated series don't really necessarily have the story. There are some that do, but like, you know, your Family Guys, your Simpsons, those shows have gone on forever. But I will say, in comparison to those, South Park, which is my pick, takes things so differently. Mm-hmm. They take so many liberties with so many things. They have a very much, we don't care who we offend, we're just going to say things the way we want to say them approach. And that's, and it's the, that it's the, their approach to comedy that I basically adopted as my own, where it's like, okay, if you can't make fun of one thing, you can't make fun of anything. The second you start saying, oh, you can't do say this about this, oh, you can't say this about, then you can't say anything about anything. You're going to sit there and you're going to be quiet. You can't, if I'm not allowed to criticize anything in the way that I'm comfortable with, in the way that I feel like I can get my point across, but you can, then you can eat a dick. Cause that's not how that works. And that's what South Park teaches. And like, they're, you think about how it started. You think about it's this little fucking cartoon that Matt Stone and Trey Parker put together with fucking construction paper, and now it's one of the most recognizable franchises on the planet. It is still going strong.
And has like recently redeveloped, like, mm-hmm. sort of, there's too many animations, Simpsons, Family Guy, they're all the fucking same. Yeah. South Park was like, we can still do what we want to do with a bit of, with a bit of story to it. And it's a completely different show now.
Cause like it had this thing a few seasons back where it was trying to make like a serialized
linear
show. And I thought it was cool.
Some member of the stories berries made sense. The season I remember.
But that's the thing. And I feel like that's one of the things that was kind of a drawback for it, where it's like you're developing this through line for the season and it's great, but you're also trying to have one-off episodes.
Yes.
And it's hard to, it's so hard to do that in an animation series like that. But now you watch them, they've kind of gone back to like their one-off contained stories.
Okay.
And it's great. I think that's where South Park really nails it, because you know, you have, okay, this is what we're tackling this week. How are the boys going to go about it? And it's always in a funny, fucked up way. And you have all these iconic characters, iconic dialogue, and it's still very flat, very construction paper looking animation. But obviously, you know, it's been retooled, it's been redone, and it's been touched up and stuff, and it looks cool. And
it's not stop motion anymore.
Great video games. They've got sick fucking video games based off of it. One that's coming out that I don't... They must have been on fucking acid when they're like, yeah, let's make this shit 3D. Why?
You can't look at games like Destiny and think, oh, that's the way we're going to make our next game, because they're doing like, so
yes, that's
well.
Exactly,
no, they're
like,
not.
That's exactly what a South Park game needs, to be like Destiny.
No, like, it's what I told you. Games as live service.
Yeah.
No one wants games as live service. It's why we're not getting, or has like the forever delayed now, the Suicide Squad game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the boat of, I don't mind live service unless they do it well, but I'd rather not have this be the last game where we get Kevin Conroy as Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Could you remove him, please, if you think your game is going to be shit?
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. That game's going to come out, and they're just going to, like, Mark Hamill is going to be livid. Because he recently said he's not doing, like, he's just reaffirmed.
He's done with the Joker.
He's done with Joker because Kevin Conroy isn't Batman anymore.
Yeah.
And no one, it doesn't look like anyone's taking up the mantelpiece as, you know, voiceover Batman now. I don't see anyone who could. Maybe give it to fucking Ben Affleck.
But so just going back to, you know, how we were talking with House about, you know, the idea of character growth. And
How does South Park handle character growth? Because they've kind of, they're like Simpsons. The boys don't age.
No, they don't. But there have been episodes where there's been like little things. There's one specific set of episodes where Stan turns 10 or something. And the second he turns 10 years old, he becomes a cynical asshole. Like everything is shit. Everything is shit. And then he starts drinking and it makes shit a little bit better for him to deal with. it was the tease of, okay, you know, Stan's going to do his own thing. Kyle and Cartman and Kenny are going to do their own thing. And then Stan might get a new best friend. And like, legitimately, this is Stan saying these things. It's like, yeah, you know, maybe this guy will be my new best friend. We'll go on adventures. And then you guys will have adventures. And then maybe we'll all come together and have a big adventure and this and that. And it's like, cool, awesome. Until you remember this is South Park and you see the rug getting pulled out from Stan. His parents getting back together. You'd be like, what? No. Growth. Adventures. Nah, Stan. Nah. That's not how this shit works. And it's like, and I think that's one of the things that South Park does well, is so well, is like the tongue-in-cheek, the meta jokes and shit like that. Where it's like, whenever you're just like, yeah, no, we're definitely the serious cartoon. We're fucking South Park, man.
Yeah, fucking South
Park. Like, we're always going to be South Park. We made a show where we made Kyle a human centipede. We attached his mouth to the asshole of a Japanese man and a woman attached to the asshole of Kyle Berflosky.
Do you want me to
this
eat?
This is South Park.
Do you want me to eat the vanilla paste or the asparagus?
And cuttlefish.
Okay, I eat the cuttlefish and the asparagus. Oh, the cuttlefish and asparagus is not sitting well. I'm a sorry, Karu. It's going to be a rot. I believe in you.
Just is like.
Stevie Ray Vaughan just shits his britches. The guy who plays the blues and died in a plane crash? Nope. That's Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Stevie Ray Vaughan just shits his britches.
Like some kind of britches holocaust.
That's why I picked South Park. Like, yes, it is still an ongoing series, but it has so many great things about it that I honestly think makes it one of, if not the best animated series going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think on top of that, the correct way to handle an ongoing series.
Yeah.
Simpsons absolutely is fucking up. Family Guy, I think, is what's happening now with Family Guy. I know when the
Family Guy,
when the strike started, actually, Fingy said he wasn't doing it anymore.
No, they're changing nights apparently. So it was airing on Sundays and now it's gonna be airing on Wednesdays in like prime time or something.
Okay, so they've gone from like the worst possible death to the second possible death. Because you don't wanna be on Wednesday, you don't wanna be on Sunday. Especially if you're still on cable television, like Family Guy.
Yeah.
But, like, in terms of the series ongoing, who's the main guy? Seth MacFarlane. Said when the strikes are doing, oh, I'm done with Family Guy. Like,
do you do Family Guy without him?
Has he taken that back?
I'm pretty sure, because I'm pretty sure they're still doing shit.
Yeah. I don't know. I know they've still got, like, the season coming out and shit, but, like, yeah. Just, they had that whole episode where Meg like gets pregnant with the "You're never gonna catch me" guy's baby.
Yep.
Like that was just weird. like, I don't know, Family Guy is one of those series that, like, had its moment in the sun and, like, is definitely sort of becoming a Simpsons, like, it's definitely was born in the Simpsons shadow, and as it forever tried to move side to side, Simpsons just got bigger and bigger, and Family Guy just couldn't grow. And so they tried to be, they had the whole Family Guy South Park shit that, like, Family Guy fans were like, no, you've just made fun of everything Family Guy. I was like, well, yeah, because it's funny. The big manatees choosing the stories. That was awesome. Because, like, the stories of Family Guy are just so bland to a certain extent.
I mean, it's sometimes it's not even really a story.
No.
To be honest.
No.
And I think that was, like, the main criticism that South Park was doing. It's like, it's just joke, 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 joke. Where's the story?
Mm-hmm. There ain't one, my buddy.
But to end on what we both agree is a great series in terms of, you know, what we're talking about, you know, long running series that covers everything we're talking about. Hilarity, pop, it's great at pop culture, great character growth, and just an overall
new characters
feel-good
I mentioned as well.
Line.
New characters came in.
New characters.
And weren't just
adding
to
the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking parks and recreation. What a fucking
doop,
show.
My dad loves that opening soundtrack because it defies musical rhythm. Like, as the notes progress, you have an expectation of what the next one's going to be. The Parks and Rec soundtrack sort of defies that. It goes down, not up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why my dad always liked it.
I remember when I first started watching it, I was a little skeptical because I just finished The Office and I was kind of getting into the mockumentary style of TV. But, like, I love Amy Poehler. I love Amy Poehler from SNL. Like, I love all the shit that she did. So I was like, all right, I'm going to give it a shot. And I was hooked episode one.
Yep. Same.
It's like, just give me more. Give me all of it.
Give me more. I think the way I said it to you before we started recording is the best way to put it. It's 100% Michael Shore.
Yeah.
Like, whereas I told, like, with The Office, he had to deal with Ricky Gervais, always, like, being there, sometimes not being there, some stories that needed, like, recreating for the American series, and sort of becoming their own thing, but still having that sort of, you can't change the way you started. Whereas you can imagine towards the end of The Office, he was like, he kind of almost like Spider-Verse. All right, let's do this one more time. And it's the Office, had he had the chance to take it all, own everything, the characters, the story, and it felt more like a living world. The Office was very contained to that one building. Whereas, you know, you set up Parks and Rec, it felt more of like a place with people. And, you know, people come and go, people get older, you know, people learn. Like, you know, Chris Pratt's character, man, goes from this, like, two IQ dipshit to, like, one of the, like, still maintaining funny, but sort of learning, growing, getting a wife. We're getting a girlfriend, getting a wife, getting a job, holding the job, actually becoming good at the job, and not just being some, like, loser pervert, and even writing in his weight loss rather than writing him out as a character.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adam Scott's, like, introduction, fucking great. The dickhead from Step Brothers, that's all I knew this motherfucker as, and now he's like the lead character in Severance. Talk about actors who reinvented themselves. That should be our next episode. Actors who reinvented themselves. And we're not allowed to mention Adam Scott because we've just mentioned him now.
Yeah.
And you can't mention... you've got one wrestling guy. You can choose The Rock or Batista. You can't have both.
there's a it's weird because you watch a lot of different shows and you're like, you look at the cast and it feels like there's a chemistry that kind of takes a little bit of time to get used to.
Yeah.
But you watch Parks and Rec and the chemistry is almost instantaneous. Even with characters just coming in, you like Adam
Scott's
character,
you come into a world Rob Lowe's character. You come into a world that already feels there.
And it's like, one of the things that always impressed me about Parks and Rec was the way it went about clearly defining who each character is, what each character wants, and how each character approaches their shit. It's such a clear visual for all of them. You know, Amy Poehler's character, Leslie, over the top, loves, very passionate about government, very passionate about helping everybody. And, you know, that you get that, like, that overly motherly instinct with everybody, with all of the characters. Nick Offerman's character, Ron Swanson, very much adamantly hates the government, very much a libertarian, very much, you know, pull yourself up from your bootstraps, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, that kind of guy. And, you know, you get all that with all these different characters, and they all play off of each other so well, because you think, like, why is this hardcore libertarian getting along so well with this overly enthusiastic government person? But they do. They click. They play opposite of each other so well. And it's like, you don't get that in very many TV shows right off the bat.
No, not at
this
all.
This shit knocked it out of the fucking park.
Yep.
And Rec. It felt weird saying it without adding that last bit.
You can go ahead and call the end of the episode there, because I don't think I've got anything more to say after that one. No, you literally just took a shotgun to this episode with that one, man. Holy shit. You, like, Parks. And Rec. Nah. I told, like, just before we finish it, speaking of, like, perfect timing for jokes, me and my dad were talking about, like, just, it's that time of year when something breaks in your house, it's almost impossible to get it fixed, and we think our freezer's on the fritz. And it's like, no, man, we're gonna phone up some freezer guy, tell him the best possible way what's broken, what's wrong. This motherfucker's gonna come here, do his whole Simpsons things, like, yeah, I know what's wrong with it, and I know what part you need, but I don't have the part, and I'm not going to get the part I can if I call today, which I won't. And it's like they just hate themselves, they hate their lives, and it's like, no one told you to do this job, man. No one told you to give up your dreams. That sounds like a you problem, my bro. Now fix my freezer. Do you want a coffee? And on the way home from lunch, my dad was just giggling to himself. It was a combination of, like, you wouldn't ever say that. It's like, because they can fuck up your freezer even more. You want them to fix shit, but it's true. And then you've got the, like, sort of the weight, and then it's like, what do you do for all these motherfuckers? Oh, do you want a coffee, mate? Before we get started? Coffee free, do you want a coffee, mate? It's like, fuck's sake. Like, I hope everyone's houses can live through the Christmas season this season.
Yes, the Christmas season, she comes upon us.
She comes upon us. Yeah, your Thanksgiving's over now, bro.
Yeah. Christmas is around the corner, and it's going to be an interesting one this year. So with that, we will leave you, and we will come back, and we will have some Christmas themed stuff as we get closer to the day.
100%, you know it. We have our end of year episode that we need to talk about.
Yep. Our look back, our regrets of certain choices made, and all that good stuff. So keep an eye out for that. And as always, thank you for joining us. Remember to like, rate, subscribe, share us. Let us know tell us what your favorite long-running TV series is. Is it even a TV series? Maybe it's just, you know, something else that you have long and is
what
running.
What series do you wish was still here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What series do you wish was a long-running series.
There's a second part to this episode in which, you know, if we could give another season to a series to end it, what would you pick? I feel like that would be cool.
That could be you know, that'd be pretty dope. All right,
be arranged.
Keep an eye out for that one, everyone.
Marie.
Come join us on this trip. Now we're like to the throwing out the script.
Come on, man. Come join us on the trip.
I'm sorry.
Now we're throwing out the script.
I hope we don't charge a penny. I hear the weakness calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.